Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, April 10, 2019. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, College Admissions Scandal, Money Laundering Added to Execs Charges, Indictment Ups Stakes Against Former BUC Board Member in Scheme, by Ben Zigterman, Boston. A day after 13 parents agreed to plead guilty to single counts of mail fraud in the college admissions scandal, former First BUC board member Elizabeth Meyer Kimmel and 15 others were hit with a superseding indictment adding money laundering to the list of charges they're facing. With the new indictment, prosecutors allege these parents laundered their money through the Key Worldwide Foundation, which claimed to help disadvantaged students, but which prosecutors say was a phony foundation that passed the payments on to coaches and athletic directors at elite universities. Kimmel, 54, allegedly paid $275,000 in 2013 to help her daughter get into Georgetown University as a purported track athlete, and $200,000 in 2017 and 2018 to help her son get into the University of Southern California as a purported pole vaulter. Many of the parents allegedly made similar payments, filing personal tax returns listing the payments as donations, according to prosecutors. In Kimmel's case, she allegedly made the payments through her family's charity, the Meyer Charitable Foundation, which she is the assistant secretary of. In her daughter's admission to Georgetown in 2013, Kimmel allegedly signed three checks to KWF from the Meyer Charitable Foundation, one for $100,000, another for $170,000, and a final one for $5,000. After the first check, the foundation's accountant sent a letter to the Meyer Charitable Foundation falsely confirming that no goods or services were exchanged for the purported donation, prosecutors said. The two larger donations show up on the Meyer Charitable Foundation's publicly available tax forms and are marked as charitable donations. With Kimmel's son's admission to USC in 2018, prosecutors said the Meyer Charitable Foundation made a $50,000 donation to the USC Women's Athletics Board, with a check signed by Greg Kimble, and a $200,000 payment to KWF, with a check signed by Elizabeth Kimmel. Last October, after the leader of the alleged scheme, Rick Singer, had become a cooperating witness, he allegedly told Kimmel his foundation was being audited by the IRS and talked with her about what he would say his foundation does. Essentially, what I'm going to tell the IRS is that your donations were made to my foundation to fund underserved kids, which is the mission of our foundation, according to a transcript of the call. So I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page. Oh, well, as far as I know, I don't know what you've done with the money I gave your foundation, Kimmel allegedly said. You never really told me. Okay, that's perfect, he allegedly responded. Each of the charges Kimmel faces come with a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release, and fines up to twice the amount of money laundered. 2 days after Kimmel was charged last month, she resigned from the First BUC Board of Directors, which she joined 11 months ago. Kimmel was the second largest First BUC shareholder on the board, which her dad, August Chris Meyer Jr., has served on since 1962. The Meyer family ran Midwest Television, which owned WCIA-TV until 1999, and last year completed the $325 million sale of its San Diego TV and radio stations. Kimmel's attorneys did not respond to a request for comment from News Gazette Media. Her kids were apparently unaware of the alleged scheme. According to the original indictment, Kimmel's son was confused when his advisor asked about his status as a track athlete. USC is conducting a case-by-case review of all students involved in the alleged scheme and has placed a hold on their accounts, preventing them from registering for classes until they agree to participate in the review, and preventing them from withdrawing from the university. In its reviews, USC said it is considering developments in the criminal cases, including plea deals, and that students could face expulsion. Suburban Express discrimination case. Bus firm owes $100,000, refunds as part of deal. By Ben Zichterman, Champaign. About a year after then-Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan sued Suburban Express and its owner Dennis Taupin for alleged discrimination and harassment of its customers, the company has reached a consent decree subjecting it to 3 years of monitoring. It also has to pay the Illinois Attorney General $100,000 and agree not to discriminate or harass its customers, the Attorney General's office said Tuesday. The $100,000 will be used to offer refunds to Suburban Express customers who've ridden the buses since April 23, 2014. Eligible customers will be able to seek a refund of up to $20 by filling out a form on the Suburban Express website beginning April 30, according to the consent decree. Suburban Express will have to include a link to this form on its home page, on ticket confirmation emails, and in marketing emails. And it can't retaliate against customers who seek a refund. The company will also have to put an anti-discrimination note on its website, emails, buses, and advertisements. To ensure compliance, Taupin and his employees will have to take an anti-discrimination class each year and keep copies of all complaints and advertisements for review by the Attorney General's office every 180 days. If the Attorney General's office believes Suburban Express isn't in compliance, it can seek relief from the court. New Attorney General Quam Raoul thinks the consent decree will stop the alleged harassment and discrimination. This consent decree brings an end to Mr. Taupin's reprehensible business practices and ensures that students receive fair and equal access to Suburban Express's services, he said in a statement. Taupin could not be reached for comment. The Attorney General's lawsuit stemmed from an email advertisement Suburban Express sent in December 2017, saying its benefits included passengers like you. You won't feel like you're in China when you're on our buses. That led to a swift backlash, apologies, and a subpoena from the Attorney General's office to determine whether Suburban Express had violated the Illinois Human Rights Act. Madigan then filed a 39-page lawsuit in April last year, attaching 182 pages of exhibits filled with screenshots of Yelp comments on negative reviews, Suburban Express's page of shame, an internal list of banned customers, emails, copies of the email advertisements, and a copy of the contract customers must agree to. Suburban Express allegedly denied credit cards from zip codes with high Jewish populations, instructed employees to avoid handing out coupons to certain students who appeared not to speak English well, and recorded a YouTube video in a U of I dorm while complaining about the lack of English speakers and mocking Asian accents, saying, "No English." When the lawsuit was filed, Madigan said she wanted to force Suburban Express and Topin to either comply with the law or be shut down. The lawsuit sought $50,000 per deceptive act or unfair practice, an additional $50,000 per deceptive act or unfair practice committed with the intent to defraud, $10,000 for offenses against people older than 65, and up to $10,000 per defendant for each unlawful act of discrimination. After the lawsuit was filed, Suburban Express and Topin agreed to a temporary restraining order requiring the company to remove personally identifying information from its website, stop retaliating against customers for negative reviews, and remove language from its contract prohibiting negative reviews. The two sides spent months negotiating a settlement, though not without some roadblocks. Last September, Topin's lawyer withdrew from the case, citing unpaid fees and a strategic impasse, and an attorney was appointed to negotiate a settlement. Then, in November, the Attorney General's office asked for a default judgment against Suburban Express and accused it of stalling. This kept being delayed until last month, when the Attorney General's office again sought a default judgment, saying settlement discussions between the parties have broken down. This apparently caught Topin's attention, and a settlement hearing was held April 1. The consent decree was approved late Tuesday afternoon by U.S. District Judge Andrea Wood, terminating the case. Besides the lawsuit from the Attorney General, Suburban Express faces lawsuits from its insurance companies, which are seeking declaratory judgments that they correctly denied coverage for damages resulting from Madigan's lawsuit. These cases appear to still be ongoing. The future of Krannert Center, Dare to Dream. In celebration of 50 years, Director Outlines Frame for Expansion by Anthony Zillis Urbana. In the lobby of at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts sits a glass-encased model of the building, displaying its four theaters and area around it. Sometimes you can catch Krannert director Mike Ross staring at the model deep in thought about what the center has the potential to become. "You can stand over there at the model and just reframe the footprint," Ross said. "I like just standing over there sometimes and just letting my mind kind of imagine." As the 50th anniversary of Krannert Center arrives, Ross is constantly thinking about what the center will be like for anniversaries ahead. And it isn't just a dream. In Ross's office sit three architectural renderings of what that new center might look like, which he didn't want to share with the public just yet. The expansion is noted on the campus's official master plan, which discusses a revitalized and renovated Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. While a new structure around the building will add a huge amount of functionality, he said it will be mandated that the aesthetic that they incorporate will be complementary to, not competitive with, the original structures. "Lots of transparency, illumination," he said. Also, by doing this, we can make the pedestrian level, the street level entry, much more exciting and accessible as well. So if you utilize the four corners for the primary large volume structures, then you can build between those. You can connect those corners with additional structures that help the framing structures, leaving for the most part the front steps clear up to the amphitheater and all that, because we don't want to obstruct that. We don't want that view from the amphitheater to the quad to be obstructed. Those early plans include one pavilion outside each of the four theaters that serve a different purpose. In the current thinking, one pavilion will be used for the curation of music and theater. One would be for performance spaces like a new, smaller chamber music hall. Classrooms and educational spaces would take up another pavilion. The final one, Ross said, might be used as residential, where students and artists could live. Ross doesn't plan to do the renovation halfway or in small bits. He looks at it as a possible 10-year plan that includes coming up with a viable funding model. It will be a multi-year planning process and a multi-year construction process as well, Ross said. The basic strategy that we have for adding new spaces onto this footprint is to incorporate the four corners of the footprint in very strategic ways to support these new structures. And in doing so, in a manner of speaking, reframe the existing structures. It sort of celebrates even more fully by framing these new 21st century structures. The plans are early, but they give insight into the new ways the center may be used over the next 50 years. But for now, Ross can only stand at the model and dream of what Krannert Center may look like in the decades to come. Coming up at the Krannert tonight, as a conclusion to its sesquicentennial celebration, the U of I Wind Symphony will combine with the Canadian Brass, a renowned brass quintet. Saturday, Krannert celebrates its 50th anniversary with the 6 p.m. Come Home Gala, featuring multiple musical performances, including a composition by guitarist Steve Dawson, to be performed with the Jupiter String Quartet. It will close out with a global toast, with those at Krannert joining people on social media in giving cheers. Tuesday, scratched from Krannert's lineup due to a musician strike, a performance by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Investigation. Shooting-related charges against man dismissed. By Mary Schenck, Urbana. A Champaign County prosecutor dismissed shooting-related criminal charges against a Champaign man after additional police investigation revealed they had the wrong person. Dante Pickens, 26, had been one of three men identified in December as allegedly being involved in the shooting of a woman who was in a car leaving the American Legion on North Hickory Street on November 18. Assistant State's Attorney Kristen Alferink said Pickens, who was arrested a month ago, gave Champaign police information to suggest otherwise. Champaign police did a lot of follow-up. We determined he was not involved, she said. Meanwhile, co-defendants Donnie Caldwell and Devianta Lindsay remain in jail, charged with aggravated battery with a firearm and aggravated discharge of a firearm. Caldwell's case is tentatively set for trial April 29, while Lindsay is set to be back in court May 7. From the local section, new mine in Vermilion County. Campus conversation. Julie Wirth's occasional chat with the University of Illinois newsmaker. Computer scientist Ryan Cunningham has worked for the National Security Agency as a hacker for Dow AgroSciences, applying artificial intelligence to genetics research, and as a consultant for defense attorneys, explaining digital evidence to their clients. Cunningham now teaches ethical decision-making at the University of Illinois. He sat down with Julie Wirth to talk about the ethics behind the tech revolution, free speech on social media, whether privacy is still possible, and the risks of teaching computers to make decisions for us. Here is a sampling. Do the people who design software programs and new devices consider the human impact and potential pitfalls? I think largely, until somewhat recently, our field has sort of neglected this. As a whole, we have been, I would say, too excited about the flashy gizmos and viewed people who were asking about these sorts of privacy concerns as people who were being, you know, that'll sort itself out, don't worry about that, you're just being old-fashioned, you're behind the times. Science and technology people tend to sort of frown on humanities, things that are a matter of opinion. They don't like to consider the fact that sometimes logic isn't everything. Emotions, feelings matter, and the impact that you're going to have on other people is very important, and you need to put some thought into that. What did you think of Facebook's decision to ban white nationalism and white separatism after the mass shooting at two mosques in New Zealand? I haven't seen exactly what their policies are going to be. That's really where the rubber meets the road. I think it's probably a good thing. We don't do things like allow ISIS members on social media that are celebrating in the wake of a terrorist attack. I think we should probably have that same standard regardless of the politics of who's speaking. How do you think Facebook and other big tech companies are doing when it comes to privacy? Oddly, the biggest problem in privacy is not necessarily the tech giants. I think they're kind of a symptom of the problem. I think most people are not aware that the sort of bucket that all of this data is going into are these big data broker companies like Experian and Equifax. But there's also other companies like them, Axiom, who are hoovering up a lot of this data about us and selling it. There is a bigger industry profiting off that data on the back end and making that data have value that I think we need to do some more thinking about regulating them. Champaign County Board. Another $410,000 to be spent on nursing home for insurance premium, by Tim Mitchell, Urbana. The Champaign County Board has already turned over the keys to the former Champaign County Nursing Home to its new owners, but it is still writing out checks for the financially challenged home. On Tuesday night, the County Board's Committee of the Whole voted unanimously to recommend appropriating $410,204 to pay for the insurance premium for 2-year claim extended reporting coverage for liability protection for the nursing home. And during a special meeting held just before the committee meeting, the county board voted 21-0 to approve budget amendments to pay off 2 nursing home general obligation bonds early. The board appropriated $3,002,800 for one bond and $1,570,000 for the second bond. We set aside money from the sale of the nursing home to pay the bonds off, said County Executive Darlene Kloppel. Earlier this month, county officials finalized the sale of the nursing home at 500 Art Bartell Road. The new name of the nursing home is University Rehabilitation Center of CU, and the legal entity operating the home is University Rehabilitation Center of CU, LLC. The home was sold for $11 million, but $1,340,000 in negotiated credits were made to the buyer. Tuesday's approval of insurance premium payments was the latest nursing home expenditure approved since the county board voted to sell the home. In December, the county board approved $2.7 million in funding to keep the nursing home in operation for another couple of months. In January, the county board approved another $6 million in nursing home expenses, both to pay off bills to nursing home vendors dating back to 2015 and to write off nursing home bad debt. In February, the county board voted to grant the county executive and treasurer authority to cover any shortfall in the nursing home's accounts payable for March, with a loan for up to $200,000. Then the board authorized them to use a loan to make up for any March payroll issues. In March, the county board spent $287,052 to pay nursing home employee benefit time and nursing home management retention bonuses. In other business, the committee voted to proclaim the week of May 5 as National Correctional Officer Week and the week of May 12 as National Police Week. From the area updates, CU Public Health District, diaper collection for babies in need, Champaign. A diaper drive will be held from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. today in the parking lot of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, 201 West Kenyon Road, Champaign. This event is intended to collect diapers for babies in need. Donors can bring diapers or make a financial contribution to purchase diapers. Donated diapers will be given to the Bottom Line Diaper Bank, which supplies diapers to Champaign County social service agencies working with low-income families. The average baby needs 50 diaper changes a week at a cost of $75, which is difficult for low-income families to afford, according to the health district. When families stretch out diaper changes, babies can develop urinary tract infections and other health problems. The diaper drive is being undertaken by the Public Health District, CU Early, Great Start, Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District, National Diaper Bank Network, News Gazette Media, and Children's Home and Aid Society. That article by Deborah Pressey. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, April 10, 2019. Please stay tuned.